Thanks. First of all, I would like to thank Ajaz and Mu and Peter for organizing the workshop and inviting me. And this is a joint work with Peter Bickel from University of California, Berkeley. And when we talk about large P, small n problem, we typically think about a multivariate setting where you have very many variables, P, and your sample size is substantially smaller. And this framework usually addresses the situation of a multivariate setting where you have P-variate IID vectors. However, a similar situation also encounters even in a relatively simple situation as in univariate time series. The talk that I would like to deliver today really tries to investigate what happens if you deal with something similar as large P, small n in a univariate time series. Okay, so suppose that you observe a time series yt, and observation arrives at every time point, for example, every minute or every second and so on. So you really don't know how many observations you're going to get. So your sample size constantly increasing. And you need to perform estimation and forecasting in real time or in online setting. The classical assumption is that this time series follows some finite dimensional model. Okay, for example, what regressive of order P or any other finite dimensional model. And then, of course, we know how to deal with it. Yes, so we apply maximum likelihood or least squares and so on, and we get the result. However, if the true underlying structure of your time series does not degenerate to finite dimensional setting, if it's really infinite dimensional one, for example, as odd regressive model of infinite dimensional or Archimor or anything else that does not degenerate to finite approximation, then you need to increase the order of approximation with arrival of every new observation or every block of observations. If you don't do that, then you're going to encounter a bias. Okay, so in our situation that we discuss here, we try to see what happens if your underlying process is really of infinite order, so it does not degenerate to any finite dimensional setting, and you deal with online forecasting and estimation, so sample size increases. So you cannot really say that this is my sample size, and given this sample size, I would like to get the best model. No, you constantly need to re-update your model approximation. And from that point of view, the number of variables that you are looking at, of course, cannot exceed your sample size m, but it can be comparable. It can be very, very large, okay? So large as roughly p over n goes to zero, okay? So we still deal with a large p, small n problem, but p is not of order log n, as in multivariate setting. But P is simply of order n, which is already quite a lot for a time series setting. And for this talk, I will focus just on linear time series, although a similar approach could be taken if you have a nonlinear setting. So suppose you have an autoregressive model, and I assume that the polynomial A is absolutely summable, and I have the fourth moment conditions on the generating noise VT. So no distributional assumption of VT. VT is just white noise with a finite fourth moment. Usually, of course, you don't know the order Q. Moreover, in most of the real processes, there exists no true Q. Okay? So the process really does not degenerate to any finite dimensional model. And one of the ideas is to either approximate this process by finite dimensional autoregressive models or finite dimensional moving average models. And the idea comes from a simple fact that autoregressive and moving average polynomials are nothing else than autoregressive models and moving average models are nothing else than polynomials. And polynomials are everywhere dense for a set of continuous functions. So what we are doing, we are just doing the simple approach that we are taking in classical numerical analysis when we approximate something with either rational functions or polynomials. Suppose for a minute that you have infinite number of observations, so in ideal, completely ideal situation. So to estimate your infinite number of parameters, you can just create the Euler-Walker system. Okay. And R, your variance-covariance matrix, is just an operator from L2 to L2. Of course, in reality, you never can deal with infinite Euler-Walker system. You don't have infinite number of observations. Instead, you need to truncate it. So truncation really is the key issue here, because truncation relates to model selection, nothing else. So we decide what is the reasonable number of parameters to estimate given our current available information. So suppose that somehow you decide on the order of truncation, okay, and then you're trying just to estimate the truncated number of parameters using your sample data. So you have tau hat p. However, as I started my talk from, the problem is how you select this order of truncation. So one idea that is most widely used is to employ archaic information criteria if your goal is to forecast, or if you just go to estimate number of parameters, it might be DIC. But in time series, it's typically our target is prediction, so therefore we usually deal with AIC. And so what we do here, we just try to minimize the archaic information criteria. And usually for short memory processes, this order of truncation, the model selected by AIC behaves as something as big O of log N, where N is my sample size. Now, if you are dealing with a situation when you get new observations at every new time point, so it means that in order to reduce your bias, you need to reestimate your parameters again and again, and you need to fit a new model. Okay? And since you can't really do that in a fully recursive way, you need to estimate all the parameters from scratch, which increases your computational cost. And that was our original motivation for this work. And later on, we found much more interesting connection with model selection, with efficiency of model selection. In particular, we know that if your goal is to forecast, AIC is asymptotically efficient. Asymptotically efficient, it means that AIC satisfies the criteria 15. And moreover, AIC is also strongly asymptotically efficient, satisfying the criteria 16, but that only happens for independent realization. So what does it mean, independent realization? So that you're allowed, I guess I'll better take it away. So basically you're allowed to observe a number of independent realization of the same stochastic process. Okay, so you can get different omegas that belongs to the same set of elementary events. And then, if you're allowed to get those independent realizations, then
AAC going to be strongly asymptotically efficient. However, in reality, you typically observe just one process. So if you have, say, stock prices of RIM, so you have just RIM, it's just one single realization of RIM stock prices. You cannot repeat it again and again. You cannot have a few RIMs, yes? So in the vast majority of cases, in reality, we are just dealing with a case of the same realization. And it turns out for the same realization process, Ingen Wei in 2005 showed that AAC is not strongly asymptotically efficient. It is simply asymptotically efficient, but not strongly asymptotically efficient. And the difference really between those criteria is that for 15, we are not allowed to have sparsity, while for 16, for strong asymptotic efficiency, you can have sparse models. And sparse models in time series in many situations can substantially outperform non-sparse ones. So we are really restricting ourselves to a much more narrow class of models if we are doing AIC. So what Ingen Wei did when they investigated in a number of papers properties, various properties of AAC, BAC, CAT, and other information criteria, they showed that one of the bad things to do if you have a time series that does not degenerate to any finite dimensional setting, and if you have just single realization of your process, is to use conditional mean squared prediction error as this one. So really we don't have any penalty here. So they try to investigate some asymptotic properties of mean squared prediction error and showed that, empirically showed that in many situations it performs way better than classical model selection criteria as AAC and BAC. So our idea is right now is instead of using truncation selected by AAC, we'll start from an overestimated, oversized truncation order P star. So we are from the beginning trying to take way more parameters that we can estimate at this time point. Okay? So we agree this. So instead of, if for example AAC suggests log n, we can take square root of lambda or any other large number, the possible large number of model order that we can think of that is reasonable for us. Okay? And of course, since we are greedy, we cannot estimate all the parameters right now because we don't have enough information and our metrics, our variance matrix becomes singular or close to singular, and it's a pretty poor estimate of a true population variance covariance metric. So therefore, we use regularization. Okay? So because we are adding regularization at every step point of estimating our model, we avoid the problem of singularity and the poor estimate of information metrics, and at the same time, we avoid frequent re-estimation of the whole model when we increase its order as we are doing with AIC. So we can consider two types of regularization. One is banding. So we select some k such that for all autocovariances that are larger than k, we just say that they're going to be zero. Okay, so therefore we have like a strip of size k plus 1 along the main diagonal. And the rest, the corners, are just zeros. Or alternatively, we can use the thresholding. So we just say that every autocovariance that is less than certain predefined threshold is going to be just zero. Now, since in time series framework, variance-covariance matrix is symmetric and surplus. So therefore, it seems more reasonable to apply banding. It's a more natural choice of a regularizing procedure. And so now, instead of solving the classical Euler-Walker equation, we're going to solve a banded Euler-Wolfer system. So we firstly bend our variance-covariance matrix and then solve the system. So we get a banded Euler-Wolfer solution. Now, we were able to show that if you take a Frobenius norm and you restrict your innovation noise to have a fourth monad, then we'll get the following consistency result for banded variance-covariance matrix. So it does converge if P over N goes to zero. Okay, so we are allowed to really have a very, very large approximating order P, way larger than AIC suggests that. Okay, so typically AIC suggests log N. We can go P over N goes to zero. It's a substantially large order approximation. And as a corollary, we also get the result that the banded solution, the banded Euler-Wolfer solution, converge in probability to the true truncated number of parameters. Now, the question is still how we can select this banding parameter or thresholding parameter. And the idea here is to use default cross-validation. The approach is the following. We have our training set, and we divide it into two parts. The smaller part, N1, we'll use for training our banding or thresholding. And the larger part of our training window will be used for verification. So basically, if you have your target quantity is G, for example, it can be variance-covariance matrix, or it can be forecasting error, or it can be parameter estimate, whatever. So we'll try to bend the first set and compare it with unbended second set. Okay? So the second set will be used as a proxy. Of course, it's a bad estimate, but it works relatively well as a proxy to the true population quantity. And then we select the best banding by minimizing this empirical loss function over a number of N splits. Now, the original approach for cross-validation, for V-fold cross-validation, is defined for multivariate setting of IID vectors. Here we have a univariate time series. So we cannot simply take random splits because we need to preserve the underlying dependent structure. So the idea is either to take the first part of observations and bend it and then compare with unbended second segment, or vice versa, take the last segment, so somewhere in the right-hand side and compare with the left-hand side. Or alternatively, we can take splits that is a proper subset of a training size and then just take N1 plus N2, that it will be smaller than the whole training window, so then we can repeat that a number of times, N times, to find the best case. And then we investigate the oracle properties of banding here. So we compare our empirical loss function with oracle loss function. So oracle is allowed to use exactly the same data, exactly the same training window and procedure, but comparing to the human being that considered just a sample loss function, the oracle is allowed to look at the actual expectation. And we have shown that in terms of the Frobenius norm, the empirical loss function and the oracle loss function behave similarly. Asymptotically, they behave similarly, and this means that even if we select banding from just sample training window, we're going to get more or less the same result as an oracle, and that is P over N goes to zero. It's the same rate of convergence. Now, however, I started really from prediction. So let's see how all this works in a prediction context. So now I will look at two empirical and loss functions, but now in terms of each step ahead prediction. And as a corollary of the previous theorem, we can really show that empirical prediction loss function does behave asymptotically exactly as oracle loss function. Okay? And now, if we look at this oracle, so this empirical loss function, oracle one, then we'll see that it's nothing else than a sample analog of conditional mean squared prediction error that was suggested by Ingen Wei as alternative to information criteria in model selection for infinite-dimensional model for the same realization process. So what we really did right now, we showed that banding could be used as an alternative to model selection, and it really behaves as being asymptotically efficient. Now, I will proceed to simulation study, and I consider a normal 5-5 model and 500 observations. So the first 200 observations will be used for training my model. So I select AAC based on the first 200 observations. And the selected model is really AR6. Now, for cross-validation, I will use first 50 observations to create my banded empirical loss function, and the rest 150 observations as a proxy to that. And so I select the best k optimal banding parameter from this model. And then I will use the mean squared, actually root mean squared prediction error to verify my forecast. And what we find here is that if we look at one step ahead prediction, AR6 provides 1.78 for this root mean squared prediction error, minus 1 because we do simulation here and we really know standard deviation of the original process, of original noise. And for banding forecast, where banding is k is equal to 21, we get 1.10, which is 38% smaller than what is selected by AAC. And the second example refers to forecasting sea surface temperature for El Niño region. So that is an average temperature deviation from deviation from the average recorded climatology. And that kind of index is used to predict the potential El Niño event. So that's how the data look like. They look more or less stationary, weakly stationary. And now we look at the observation starting January 1950 to April 1993. And we use first 120 observations as a training window, both for AIC and for banding selection, for cross-validation. So if I apply AIC to the whole 120 observations, then the best model selected is error-free. And I will apply, I will split this 120 observations to two parts. First 30 observations will be used to create a banded forecast, and the next 90 observations will be used as a proxy for verification. And we find that the best banding parameter is 9, and the rest of the data, the rest of 400 data, will be used for verification of AIC forecast and banded forecast. And again, as in the previous example, we find it should be root mean squared prediction error is 35% smaller for banded forecast comparing to ASC selected focus. And I start here from a quite large model from culture-like truncation of 10 by 10 covariance metrics. And we played with other covariance metrics like of slightly smaller and slightly larger order, and we found that it's a reasonable gap. Now, in terms of the original truncation, like here 10 by 10, we still need to provide some rule of thumb how to select that. And in time series, the usual, the folklore suggestion is take, say, 1/4 of your sample size as a reasonable proxy. And after that, you can play with Bayesian selection and cross-validation for this idea. Okay, so as a conclusion, we have shown that banded focus and banding as it is can be used as an alternative to model selection criteria currently employed such as AIC or BIC, and really the performance of banded focus is substantially better in many situations, especially in the situations where the underlying structure of your observed time series is quite complicated, and it does not degenerate to any finite dimensional model. If it does degenerate to any ART or MAQ, so eventually banded estimate and the usual AAC estimate should coincide, but that is usually not it's usually not the case in reality where the true model follows any ARP or any ARQ. It really follows something much more complicated and even possibly nonlinear structures. So anything that we are doing here with a linear approximation is still just a proxy to the reality that we observe. Still, it will be interested to expand the result on asymptotic efficiency of cross-validation as a model selection criterion to strong asymptotic efficiency. Because with banding, and especially with thresholding, for which we can get a very similar theoretical result, we can allow to get sparse models, while AAC does not consider sparse models at all. So we can really consider way richer family of model candidates that is typically used by current model selection criteria. Another interesting thing here is instead of using banding, we can combine reinforced surplus structure and thresholding together. Because variance covariance metrics that we discussed here, the population one, does have a surplus structure. However, for sample variance covariance metrics of the time series, you don't have exact surplus structure. You have almost surplus structure, but since number of observation grows, so what you have on the main diagonal and the side diagonal still differs by some quantities. So that the idea is that, for example, if you consider say 2 by 2 k. So here you have y c squared on the main diagonal. Here you have y c minus 1 squared. So if here you start 1 from c, here you need to start from 2 to c. So although in asymptotics, this value converge to the same thing for any finite dimensional sample size, you cannot really apply thresholding directly because these two points will differ. So alternative idea is to reinforce surplus structure. To reinforce surplus structure to force values on the main diagonals and the sub diagonals to be exactly the same, and then apply thresholding. However, this approach will lack the iterative structures, so it might be a little bit more computational expensive comparing to Bayesian. But at the same time, it might allow you to get more general class of models. And the last extension that we are trying to investigate, what if the underlying structure has model parameters that are not absolutely summable? Okay, what if you have something like a long memory model? Or what if you have nonlinear structure? How Bayesian and threshold will perform there? And what kind of asymptotic properties for model selection we can suggest for those class of temporal stochastic processes?
And then this has, it is on, so they can hear me. Yes, they can. That's good. That's not so bad. That's okay. Yeah. Hello. Long time no see. Indeed. Yeah, so that'll be all right. I can just leave that there.